couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. This week, we're going to be delving into all the problems you can possibly face in a marriage, because we've got Annabelle, which deals with having a baby and a haunted doll, Gone Girl, which deals about missing persons and possible murder, Left Behind, which deals with, if you guys don't have the similar religious beliefs, and Stephen King's A Good Marriage, which is about somebody who is probably a serial killer in the marriage. And then finally, The Two Faces of January, which is possible infidelity and wandering eyes when you're wanted criminals on the run in Greece. So yeah, it's a marriage counseling weekend, and we're going to be talking about those films. We're also going to be talking about the news, the trailer park, box office prediction, and the world famous DVD roundup. If you want to get a hold of me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can go to fatguysatthemovies.com on the internet or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to hit me up on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
That's right, Ron Burgundy. Let's move into the news. I have to apologize first to everybody. I got a little bit of a raspy, sexy voice. I got the Demi Moore thing going on. Got a little bit of a cold, but I'm still doing the show and seeing the movies because there's a lot to talk about this week. And we're getting ready to head into award season and Halloween season, so we've got some horror movie related stuff. So it's very exciting, which means I just need to plow ahead and not let any sort of sickness get me down, because I am a trooper and I am at your beck and call to talk about movies. And let's talk about a little bit of news. Probably the most ridiculous piece of news is Kevin Smith announced on his podcast that he secured funding for Clerks 3 by directing Tusk and having it bomb so hard. I still don't understand how that works. He claims it's because it showed that he stretched, and then the companies came to him and said, oh, what do you have next? Let's see what you have next. He's like, well, I can do Clerks 3. And they go, yes, 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 green light, we're going to do it. I was reading an article on Pajiba this week, and it dissected that. And it points out Kevin Smith is a shyster. He's a charlatan. He doesn't tell the truth ever. In his own personal hype. And they kind of painted a picture in this article of what probably went on in the conversation was, well, Tusk didn't go anywhere and nobody liked it. What else have you got? Not what do you have next? It's what else do you have left? And what does he have left? Going back to this 20-year-old well to do Clerks 3, really one of the few successes he's ever really had. And it's retreading old ground. So this, yeah, you're going to get Clerks 3, but you're getting Clerks from a guy in his mid-40s. This is like Tommy Chong doing more drug humor when he's in his 60s. Yeah, he's going to do Clerks 3, and that's great for fans of that. I grew out of that a long time ago. Another piece of news, there's a couple things in terms of rebooting and starting things over. I Am Legend is apparently getting a reboot without Will Smith. He was, of course, in the movie that came out only 7 years ago, but they're rebooting it, which I'm assuming they're going back to the original book by Richard Matheson, which is a little bit closer to the original movie, The Last Man on Earth, with Vincent Price, although that was very low-key, but it's a good film. I think that's a good idea, because Will Smith, I think, has kind of become a caricature of himself. I think he's still going to be a box office draw, but I haven't seen him do anything impressive at all. In any way, over the last 5 or 6 years. Rush Hour, the movie, the one with Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker, which pretty much is the entirety of Chris Tucker's career over the last dozen years, that is getting a TV series, but it's by Bill Lawrence, who did Scrubs and Cougar Town. I have to say, I'm completely torn. I'm so confused on how to feel about this, because while I like the Rush Hour movies, the idea of doing a series sounds awful. Sounds like a terrible idea, but it's Bill Lawrence. And he's done two fantastic TV series, Scrubs and Cougar Town. So I don't know, it might actually end up being good. Another piece of news that's interesting is sort of people are saying, is this going to redefine how Hollywood works? Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon is getting a sequel. Only it's premiering on Netflix. It's also going to be shown in some IMAX theaters. Which is a bizarre dichotomy, because IMAX is where you go for pristine images and great sound, and Netflix is what you watch with scaling internet streams and possibly fuzzy picture, because of net neutrality falling apart. And you watch it at home with the kids running around and, you know, the phone ringing or whatever, and as many distractions as possible. Also, in the same vein, Adam Sandler has signed a deal to do 4 movies through Netflix. This news all dropped this week, and there's a lot of people speculating. Is this changing the way movies are distributed? My answer is no. And here's why. Direct-to-video platform movies are nothing new, and they're not necessarily a mark of quality. Now, I mean, there's some really cool stuff being released, limited by much smaller houses, like, you know, even Magnet or IFC will release stuff, and you'll see other things from Magnolia and Sony Pictures. There's a lot of stuff that gets out on VOD that actually is quite innovative, but that's for the small distributors, and that's if it's not going to have a big theatrical run. But a movie like this, a sequel or a string of movies at the end of some comedian's terrible run of films is nothing new. We've had direct-to-video crap for years. So I don't think that, I mean, maybe if they become huge moneymakers and win Oscars, sure, but I don't expect that out of the Adam Sandler movies. And probably not Crouching Tiger either. The last piece of news I want to hit on is Twilight is not dead. It's going to continue. However, it's going to continue in the form of short films made by filmmakers and released on Facebook. And while people are going bonkers about this and saying how terrible it is because we have to face more Twilight stuff, I'm thrilled. And here's why. They're probably not going to get a proper theatrical release unless they do like a one-night event where they put them all together and release the best in theaters. But even if they do that, I don't have to see it. It's not going to be part of the main release schedule. So unlike the other Twilight films where I was obligated to see as a film critic, I don't have to see these. I don't have to watch the ones on Facebook. And they certainly aren't going to get nominated for an Oscar, so they're not going to be compiled in the Oscar shorts category. So I'm fine. Make all the Twilight stuff on Facebook so I don't actually have to watch it. That's what I have to say. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Next up, we're going to be rolling into the trailer park. Here are two movies that are somewhat anticipated because they're by big directors. The first one is Inherit Vice, which opens on December 12th in limited release, and it comes out wide on January 9th.
Michael Z. Wolfman.
And Mickey Wolfman.
And Mickey Wolfman.
Has vanished.
So where would I find him?
He's technically Jewish, but wants to be a Nazi.
And a girl don't necessarily want to get into difficulties with those folks.
You got a spare picture I can borrow?
Well, maybe you're better off with the Nazis.
Now, I am not somebody who goes crazy for P.T. Anderson. I think his best movie, even today to now, is Boogie Nights. I thought that was a masterpiece, and then his ego got too big. And I know there are people who thought The Master was this brilliant piece, and it was a decent movie, but he's sort of like into his own hype. And the only thing that's more annoying than a new movie of his and the hype that surrounds that is the hype that surrounds a David O. Russell film, which I guess we're not getting because we got the 1-2 punch of Silver Lining Playbook 2 years ago and then American Hustle last year. This might be okay. It looks interesting. It looks like it'll be funny. Let's hope that it kind of gets his old flair back from Boogie Nights. The next movie I want to hit really quick is Black Hat, which is not a rap group started by Chris Hemsworth. It is a thriller by Michael Mann about hacking. It opens January 16th.
Some hacker is hitting our financial markets.
4 major banks, and that's just what we know about?
If we want clues to the hacker's identity, we need a man named Hathaway.
Is he political? Terrorist attack, any declaration?
The guy we're working will drop the big hammer and not think twice about it.
Mama, take this badge for me.
Real hit is still to come.
This one could be good. I don't know. I mean, there have been so many movies about hacking. This just looks like a rehash of The Net or Enemy of the State. And the problem is I'm not a huge Michael Mann fan. I haven't seen the really good Michael Mann movies. I haven't seen The Insider, and I haven't seen Heat. I do need to see those. But everything else I've seen of his, I've kind of been underwhelmed. Collateral was okay. It's probably going to be like Body of Lies by Ridley Scott. Anyways, we will find out in January. Because that's the other problem. It comes out January 16th, which is usually not a good release date for movies. All right, I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Annabelle and Stephen King's A Good Marriage. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, rasping it up, sounding sexy for the ladies, or just sounding creepy. One of the two. I don't know. We'll find out. Email me. Let me know. The movies I want to hit on this point, one's definitely a horror movie. The other one's a marginal horror movie. It's definitely involves a person who's known for horror, that being Stephen King. But the first one I want to talk about is Annabelle. In this prequel to The Conjuring, we learn the terrifying history of the doll Annabelle and how a demon became attached to her. Isn't that sweet?
There are things happening that I can't explain.
We should talk to someone.
I don't think what you're experiencing is a ghost.
Sometimes demons can attach themselves to objects.
What do I do?
Protect your family.
Who are you?
I loved The Conjuring. I thought The Conjuring was fantastic, and I really like this last run of horror films that James Wan has done, even though he's come out and said he's not going to do horror anymore. And that's fine. I mean, he's known for horror. He kind of redefined the genre twice. He did it with Saw, and then he did it with Insidious was the first one. So I like where he went with stuff, and if he wants to spread his wings and do more things as a director, maybe he'll come back in a couple of years. But he produces Annabelle. It's not directed by him. He produces it. What's nice about it is it follows the same filmmaking pattern that The Conjuring did. It's a slow burn. Actually, it has a little more in common with Insidious, I would say, than necessarily The Conjuring. And that's good because I loved Insidious. I thought that was great. It's a slow burn. It's a creepy movie. It deals with the doll Annabelle, but the doll doesn't like... The doll's like a weeping angel. If you watch Doctor Who, that's what the doll moves around, but you never see it move around. And that's kind of what's so chilling about it. It uses the light and the shadow and the anticipation of what's going to happen perfectly, and it does pull on that suspense. And even though you know what's going to happen, because, well, especially the ending gets a little telegraphed, you've seen horror movies before, you know how these things go. But I loved the throwback nature to 70s and even 60s horror films, which is great to see, because it's not the gimmick of found footage, and it's not just trying to be obnoxious and loud. It actually is trying to scare people, and I think it's doing a good job. I don't necessarily think it's really all that scary. The Conjuring was a little scarier in terms of kind of getting in your head. Same thing with Insidious. So this isn't terrifying, but it's certainly a good effort. It certainly is a well-made horror film. And don't let the sweet, lovable name distract you. I mean, it also almost borderlines on silly at times, because the doll is so creepy. The doll is terrifying from the moment they take it out of the box. Now, of course, we saw it in The Conjuring, and of course it was all dirty, and its eyes had sunken in, and it was looking as evil as possible. So they had to use that doll, but they kind of wanted to show the doll when it was new. And even, but you know, the second you pull that doll out, the entire audience started chuckling, because it's such a terrifying looking doll. And I have a thing about creepy dolls the way some people have a thing about creepy clowns. So I look at this thing and I'm like, this is terrifying. And other dolls in this woman's collection, because she collects the dolls, that's how she ends up with Annabelle. The other dolls are creepy as all get out too. And they put it in a nursery. That's, I think, what's so funny. I'm like, you're going to give this child nightmares, because you're putting the creepiest dolls on the planet in one room staring at your baby. It's a really well done movie, and it focuses on this internal stuff happening within the house. This is why it reminds me of Insidious and sort of the struggle the woman, the mom, has to deal with. I think it's a well-made movie. Like I said, not as good as The Conjuring, but still pretty good. So I'm going to give it a rocks, because it's still good.
It rocks.
Excellent.
All right, you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is more dysfunctional marriage issues, because the last one was about the struggles you go with when you're pregnant and when you're having a baby. It's not easy. It's not easy to be a parent. It's not easy to be married all the time. So you're dealing with struggles, and that's that, and Annabelle focuses on some of the interpersonal problems of the marriage. A Good Marriage is, Stephen King's A Good Marriage, actually, is a full title. It has a much more, let's just say, dangerous hook, because it involves something that hopefully not a whole lot of people have to go through. In the movie, a happily married woman gets a shock when she discovers that her husband is a notorious serial killer.
When will you be back?
Well, it depends on the traffic.
Drive safe. Bye. Marjorie Duvall moved here after her divorce 5 years ago. Miss Duvall's body was discovered early this morning.
Elements of the crime suggest that it was the work of the notorious serial killer who calls himself Beatty.
You just had to look, didn't you?
As I understand it, and I'm going from the press release I got, this is the first time Stephen King has written a feature-length script for one of his original stories. And he's only done it a couple times, because he did it with Pet Sematary. You know, he did Maximum Overdrive. He's done a handful of scripts. Now, he's other did stuff like Cat's Eye and Creepshow. And I know he did the TV movie Storm of the Century. And you've seen him develop scripts in other venues. But this is the one that's based on a story that he's adapted. So they're really kind of pushing it that way. And his name's in the title. It's actually titled Stephen King's A Good Marriage. And I haven't read Stephen King for years. I kind of, somewhere in the mid 90s, I kind of just fell off. And it turns out it was when he kicked alcoholism. I stopped reading his stuff. I didn't find it as good. And I realized that it was after he had stopped drinking that, in my opinion, his writing suffered. Good for Stephen King, because he got off a really bad habit, but, you know, unfortunately you suffer as an artist, and so his art isn't as good as it was in the heyday when he was fighting demons and all these personal problems. So I've read a lot of his old stuff, and seeing this, it did kind of feel a bit like old Stephen King. And what's neat about Stephen King is he can take a very standard story and make it something different. And what's neat about this is you get this log line that she discovers her husband's a serial killer, and it's not suspected or anything. It's pretty unequivocally realizing that he's the serial killer. And it goes about it in a different way. You expect it to take a very standard Lifetime movie of the week approach, and it doesn't. It takes a couple steps off the beaten path, which is what makes it an interesting film. The other thing that really helps a movie is the acting. Anthony LaPaglia as the husband is good, and like Kristen Connolly plays the daughter and she's good, and Stephen Lang plays a detective sniffing around, and he sort of channels Fred Gwynne from Pet Sematary in this with his Maine accent, which is, I don't live in Maine, so it sounds authentic to me. But Joan Allen is the one who carries this movie on her shoulders. What's nice is she's allowed herself to age. She no longer is, like when she was doing like movies like Face Off, she was struggling with the fact that she was in middle-aged. And now she's past that. She knows she's an older woman. You know, she's a more mature woman. But she brings some real acting chops too. Without Joan Allen, this movie would be nothing. And she really puts some humanity there. And she balances the script, and she grounds the script. And even when she makes choices that you don't agree with, they're believable choices because of her performance. So if you're a fan of Stephen King's stuff, or if you're a fan of Joan Allen, this is worth checking out. And it works as a bit of a horror movie. It's on video on demand now, and it's in limited release. You can check your local listings. But it's definitely worth checking out. So I'm going to say Stephen King's A Good Marriage kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Next, we need to talk about Gone Girl and Left Behind. But before that, I need to go to a break. Boo! It's Halloween time. How's your horror movie watching going, everybody? Mine's going great. I'm tearing through my classic monsters. I'm not tearing through it. I'm slowly pacing myself. I'm watching the originals. I'm doing them in the order in which they were released. I watched Dracula and the original Spanish Dracula, which is a fascinating movie because it was shot on the same sets and the exact same story, only with Spanish actors. And I watched Frankenstein and The Mummy, and now I'm going to be starting getting into the sequels, which some are good and some are bad. Some are dry, like Dracula's Daughters, and some are bonkers, like House of Dracula. Plus, I'm picking up a couple ones. I watched Madhouse, which was an old Amicus and American International production that starred Peter Cushing and Vincent Price, did not do terribly well. But now we're done talking about horror movies. Let's talk about more issues with marriage. Kick it off with Gone Girl. Batman's wife, a former James Bond villain, goes missing, so Madea steps in to defend him while Barney Stinson lurks creepily around.
Nick Dunn, you're probably the most hated man in America right now. Did you kill your wife, Nick?
Everyone told us and told us marriage is hard work.
I had nothing to do with the disappearance of my wife. I have nothing to hide.
Sammy got friends we can talk to?
No, not really.
You don't know if she has friends, you don't know what she does all day, and you don't know your wife's blood type.
Amy is the kind of girl who attracts admirers.
This is, of course, directed by David Fincher, and it's his follow-up to The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which I loved. But see, Fincher blows hot and cold for me. I thought The Social Network was okay. And I thought Benjamin Button was way too long, especially based on a 12-page story or something. So his stuff, I'm not one of those people who immediately says Fincher's stuff is brilliant. I don't say that. I think he's hit or miss for me, really. He hits it with Gone Girl. I think this is a good movie. He's getting a certain degree of criticism. What I find funny is he's getting the criticism for doing basically just a popular novel. What people are calling like an airport novel, something you pick up and you read and it's a real quick burn. I've never read the book. I found out my wife read the book, which kind of creeped me out that she read the book and never told me about it. If you've seen the movie or read the book, you'll understand why that maybe bothers me a little bit. Hopefully my wife isn't doing anything nefarious. But I've heard people talk about this nonstop to the point that it's really shoving Annabelle out of the spotlight for this weekend. And it's a good movie. What's fascinating about it is it keeps changing. It evolves as a movie. Starts out relatively straightforward, then it reveals something, and then it reveals something. And while some of the things it reveals and it pulls off, you know, it's like sort of like an advent calendar. You open it up and there's a piece of chocolate underneath. You open it up, there's this piece of intrigue there. Boop, boop, boop. And while the trailer hints that there's a lot more going on beneath the surface, it really keeps that up. And it keeps you guessing. I've not read the book, like I said, so I can't tell. I hear it's a good adaptation. I don't know how truthful it is. I'm assuming it is, because that would be what makes a good adaptation. But it's a well-made movie. It's a very well-acted movie. Everybody really owns their roles. I mean, Ben Affleck, he plays that perfect balance between possibly smarmy and smug and really just kind of innocent victim at times. And Rosamund Pike plays, she's gotten more attractive to me as she's gotten older. I mean, you go back and look at her real early stuff, you know, like 10, 12 years ago. And I was like, eh, like she was in a Bond movie. She was in Die Another Day. And I could take it or leave it. But I've really kind of grown attracted to her as she's gotten a little older. And she does a fantastic job in the role and doing a lot of challenging scenes. And it's well directed. It's very clearly a Fincher movie, just sort of his deliberate pacing and sort of that perfectionist filmmaking technique. But it keeps you guessing. And it's not as satisfying. When all said and done, it wasn't as satisfying to me as it could have been. But I understand Fincher was adapting the novel. So it really is a well-made movie. It's entertaining. I don't think it's going to be remembered as a great classic of Fincher's. It's not going to be like people went bonkers over The Social Network and Benjamin Button, partly because it's Benjamin Button. He did a lot of innovative things. And even The Social Network, he did some stuff with the Winklevoss twins and having Aaron Sorkin's screenplay helped him out in terms of kind of hitting this stride. But I think Gone Girl, it is a Lifetime movie of the week done extremely well. And it's that kind of a story that works on the big screen. And it's a good movie. It's worth seeing, especially if you don't know it. And just make sure you go and you don't know anything about it. I mean, if you read the book, you're going to want to see it. But don't read too much about it. Don't read stuff on Wikipedia or whatever. Go see it cold. Go as cold as you can, because that's the best way to experience this movie, because there is so many layers to it. So I'm going to say Gone Girl rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie is less about marriage and more about the end of the world, and that would be Left Behind. As the rapture happens and the righteous are plucked from Earth, those left behind must come to terms with what happened.
People from all over this plane have simply vanished.
I know you all want answers, and believe me, so do I, and I'll do my best to get them.
I heard some doctors talking. It's not just here. It's all over the world.
One of these days, the sky's gonna break.
Chloe, are you okay?
Yeah, but Mom and Raimi, they're both gone.
Irene knew this was coming, the way it happened. How could she know that?
This is technically a remake of a movie that was made, I think, in 2000, with Kirk Cameron in the lead role. They've now got Nicolas Cage. Poor Nicolas Cage. I have not felt so much pity for Nicolas Cage ever than watching him in this movie. Because he's doing this because he got in some sort of tax mess. I don't know whether it's sort of like he lives a life like David Foley, where he is so in arrears in payments to either ex-wives or alimony or taxes. Who knows where his debts are going? But his best days are long behind him. You know, David Foley, he's not doing news radio anymore, and he's suffering from having to pay alimony for the time he did news radio now. And Nicolas Cage, he used to make $20 million a movie. He doesn't anymore. He makes maybe, you know, he probably makes about $200 in lunch for these movies. And you could just tell his heart's not in it anymore. He just looks so tired making this movie. You could tell he just probably goes on set. He's like, oh God, what do I have to do next? Anyways, it is a movie about the rapture, and it's probably the most boring rapture you're ever going to see. You know, the rapture happens, and it happens in a blink of an eye. Very biblical. Blink of an eye. And then it's just boredom. I know it's a faith-based movie, but it's just so preachy. I mean, there's a scene in the beginning where literally somebody stops somebody at an airport and starts preaching to him. Literally starts preaching to him. And what do they do in return? They preach back to her. You watch the film and you kind of are going, well, wait, aren't we in a free-for-all? You're already not getting into heaven. You're left behind. You missed the rapture, people. So the game is up. You got to fend for yourself. And I'm not a biblical scholar, so I don't know what goes on behind this and what could what your options are if you miss the rapture. It's just, it's so boring. And just nothing happens in this movie. It's the apocalypse, for crying out loud. It is the end of days. There should be something interesting happening, but nothing interesting happens. And on top of it, they gloss over some theological questions you'll want to get an answer to. And the reason they do it is they're being politically correct. All the kids disappear, but they never address at what age they don't disappear. Or do they? Is it up 13 and below? You know, because all the babies disappear, of course, because babies are innocent. And you have a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old. But you know, I've known some real crappy 10-year-olds in my life. And what about the 13? What if they're 15? At what point? Is it when you turn 18? Is that what God's cutoff is? They gloss over that. They also gloss over other religions. They don't have anyone saying, welp, this happened worldwide except for the Middle East. You're all still there. You know, or something like that. It doesn't address what happens with Muslims. It doesn't happen with Buddhists in other countries. It doesn't discuss what happens to the Papua New Guinea tribes that have never seen another human being from outside of their own little section of the world. It really cops out on that. I don't know. It's a bad movie. And the only reason it got a theatrical release was Nicolas Cage, and he doesn't save it. Not even close. So the Left Behind totally sucks.
It sucks.
All right, I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the two faces of January, the box office, and the DVD roundup.
Did the monster mash?
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
They did. hit the monster man.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Wrapping up the show here. Before we wrap up the show, though, I do want to talk about another movie. And this is The Two Faces of January, again, dealing with certain marriage issues. A married couple befriends a petty criminal in 1962 Greece, and they are all swept up in a mess of murder and hidden identities.
I represent some very unhappy clients. I'm just here for the money.
Chester?
Oh, God.
I have a friend. He might know somebody that could help you out.
I'd certainly make it worth your while.
It's all over the news. You have to turn yourself in.
Well, the rest of you is an accomplice.
Guess you must have thought of that, or you would have gone to the cops.
This one is produced by the people who did Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, and it's originally written by the person who wrote The Talented Mr. Ripley. It's not just a rehash of either of those, actually, which is good, because it's nice to see a movie that is not just a rehash of previous work. It stars Viggo Mortensen and Kirsten Dunst as the marriage couple, and yes, there's an age discrepancy there, but it's relevant to the story. And Oscar Isaac, who really kind of made a splash last year with Inside Llewyn Davis, he is the petty criminal who meets up with them, and it shows sort of they just kind of have this little friendship, and then a little bit of paranoia kind of swirls around. Now the movie is paced like an old Hitchcock film, and it's pretty obvious that's what they're doing. It's very obvious. They're going for Hitchcock. Not as obvious as, say, Brian De Palma when he made, like, Body Double and especially Dressed to Kill, where he just shamelessly rips off Hitchcock. This is going for the Hitchcockian thriller. You can tell completely with the music. You can tell because it was made, I mean, it looks like a Hitchcock movie because it was in Europe, and it takes place during the era when Hitchcock was making films like Psycho and The Birds and in sort of his resurgence in the later part of his career. Now, it doesn't hold the suspense all the way through. It ebbs and flows. There are times when it's really quite good, and it really presses along and makes a good, intriguing movie and a bit of a thriller. And there are then times that it just sort of plods a bit and sort of breaks its stride, we'll say. It's very inconsistent that way. But there's good performances. Oscar Isaac does a fine job, and Viggo Mortensen. It's great to see him back in movies because, you know, he had some real big splashes, obviously, with the Lord of the Rings movies, but he did movies like A History of Violence and Eastern Promises. You know, we'd seen him do a lot of stuff with Cronenberg and then kind of disappear for a while. It's nice to see him back. And he does a fine job. The characters sometimes make some really stupid decisions all around, which hampers the enjoyment of the movie because you want to see smart people trying to get out of difficult situations than people who are able to get out of difficult situations then bumble around and cause problems for themselves. So it's not a perfect movie by any stretch of the imagination, but it works. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It's well shot. It has some interesting imagery and symbols that are fun to decode. And it does kind of hit that Hitchcock thriller, but not as perfectly as I think it really wants to. So I'm going to say The Two Faces of January kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office here. Let's see. Last week, I said that The Equalizer was going to win. I was correct. And I mean, not bragging too much about that because it was The Equalizer. It was pretty obvious what it was going to do. And I think it's the fourth highest grossing opening in September. It made $34 million, which is fantastic for the movie. I mean, it's going to make its money back. Denzel Washington has proved that he is a movie star with a strong audience. They will come out and see his movies. Stuff's never going to open at 90 million or 100 million, but he's good for 30 million or so. And that's what Hollywood wants. And they can crank out some more of these. I still want to see Denzel Washington versus Liam Neeson at some point. Maybe Taken 4. Maybe he could be the bad guy. That would be great. That would be a huge movie, actually. That would be a huge hit. So it did well. The Box Trolls came in third, just barely being beaten by The Maze Runner the second weekend, which isn't bad. I mean, The Maze Runner opened a lot higher than some people were predicting, and it only dropped 46%. So the $17 million for The Box Trolls is not bad at all. It's a little less than the $20 million I was hoping for, but, you know, considering Laika has never made a ton of money with their movies. Coraline and Paranorman didn't do sensationally well, but they're enough to make money. And it's very European minded. I imagine it's going to have a respectable run in the foreign box office. And, you know, I mean, it should make back, it should gross approximately its $60 million budget by the time it's out of theaters. So yeah, that was good. And then of course you go down the old fashioned way. Guardians of the Galaxy is still kicking. It's at $319 million coming out of last weekend. It is now the highest grossing original Marvel movie that's not a sequel, you know, like the Iron Man movies or the Avengers, which is technically a sequel to four different movies. So yeah, good for Guardians of the Galaxy is still the big surprise hit of 2014. This week, I think that Gone Girl is going to do better than what it's being predicted by some. Some are saying in the 30s. And I think Fox is hedging their bets by saying it's going to be in the 30s, low 30s, so that when bigger numbers come in, it'll do well. And the only reason I say that is because every single person... I went to the doctor this week. And of course, my doctor knows I do movie reviews. And that's always... I mean, if I did taxes, my doctor wouldn't care. But I always, whenever I go to a doctor or a dentist, or they're like, oh, what movies are good? You know, I always get that question. And I went to the doctor and he was asking me about Gone Girl. And I'm like, you're asking me about Gone Girl? So he's asking about Gone Girl. My wife was asking me about, when's that coming out? And I go on the radio, I'm doing interviews for pre-records and people are saying, hey, how's Gone Girl? I'm getting a lot of people asking. And when I went to go see it, I ended up seeing it on Thursday night. Because Fox doesn't screen in Columbus, which is stupid and it's dumb on their part. But that's the situation I live in. And I went to go see it Thursday night, and it wasn't a packed house. It wasn't sold out by any stretch of the imagination, but it was pretty full for just a Thursday night at 9 o'clock screening. And it's not like a college kids movie. It's not like when I went and saw Let's Be Cops in July or August when that came out. That one, of course, that was filled with college students. This one was very quiet audience, very respectful audience, way more respectful than the people I saw Left Behind with, because they talked the whole doggone thing, stupid people. But yeah, I think Gone Girl is going to do well. I think I'm going to give it $40 million. I'm going to say that's going to do well. And it's going to trump Annabelle. Annabelle is probably going to be good for about $25 million. I think it's going to be a great weekend at the box office because Gone Girl and Annabelle serve two different camps. They serve two different types of people. Left Behind is going to be Left Behind. And A Good Marriage, I don't think, is going to get a wide enough release that it's really going to show up much on anybody's radar in terms of box office. So yeah, $40 million for Gone Girl. I'm going to say $25 million for Annabelle. All right, that sound means it's time to roll into the world-famous DVD roundup. All right, let's talk really quick about the movies. The probably my top pick for this week on DVD and Blu-ray is Chef. It stars and is directed by Jon Favreau. He's sort of hanging up his superhero cape. Well, I guess he did the Iron Man movies, two of them. So he doesn't wear a cape in those. So he's not putting up his cape. But he's stepping out of the superhero sci-fi genre and is doing he did a much smaller, more intimate movie. And he's about a chef who gets fired from his job and then opens up a food truck. And it's one of those movies that's just, it's a good, nice, feel good movie that has just interesting characters that are fun to watch. It doesn't deal with any heavy issues. It has some things with divorce and dealing with his son, that of course, you know, propel the story a bit, but it's all very nice. It's not like a big, complex, angsty movie. And that's okay to have that now and then. It's really a charming little film. And I think it's one that sticks with you. Definitely worth checking out. Watch Chef. Chef is good. Another one is Ivory Tower, which we covered a couple weeks ago. And this one is about the rising cost of college education and sort of why we're in there and what's happening and how valuable it really is in terms of real dollars. And while education's good, is it saddling kids with debt? And it's a fantastic look at that because I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. And it's an eye-opening movie. There's also 24, Live Another Day, the TV show, the continuation of 24, which did okay. It was fine. I think we're kind of past the whole Jack Bauer stories. I mean, that seemed to be much more of a prior to 2010 kind of show, you know, post 9/11 kind of show. And I think we've gone far enough past 9/11 that the terrorist thing has changed enough that it's not as gripping, we'll say. Transformers Age of Extinction is out there. That's a terrible movie, but it's, if you like the robots blowing things up, that's out there. And then the stinker of the week is Leprechaun Origins. I actually haven't seen it. I'm only giving it a stinker of the week because St. Patrick's Day was 6 months ago. That would have been so much more relevant if it came out then. Talk to me in about 6 months when we're at St. Patrick's Day again, and then I might watch it. All right, next week we're going to be talking about The Judge, Dracula Untold, Addicted, and Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.